If you love me, come on, get involved. Feel it rushing through you from your head to toe. Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your small guitar of music news and critical superstructures. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
Love is a blaze, I saw flames from the side of the stage, and the fire brigade comes in a couple of days. Until then, we got nothing to say and nothing to know, but something to drink and maybe something to smoke.
We're listening to Sing, the new single by Ed Sheeran,
aka Justin Timberlake, The Lost Tapes.
Ed Sheerlake.
I hear prices are very reasonable in that suburb.
Recently, John Caramonica, hi John.
Yo!
You were visiting with Ed.
With Ed, yes.
In Austin, Texas. Ed,
why not?
Tell me something about his aura, because this is a guy that people want to know, what is it about his magnetism? Because he's no Clark Gable.
Are we now, is Popcast now in the business of casting aspersions upon people's images?
I'm a regular guy. I see all the same famous people on TV as everybody else.
That's true.
So I think that my observation is semi-valid. So, but
I also would like to contend that that those sorts of observations are actually integral to the work of a cultural critic.
Yeah. Well, and also
I like to say peace to our detractors.
Fine.
First of all, peace to our detractors.
In any case, this conversation is valid.
It's valid. It certainly took up half the piece I wrote about him, so it better be.
Ed Sheeran is an interesting looking guy. We haven't quite seen a pop star looking like him.
And doing what he does.
He's not a knockoff of somebody else.
No.
But musically, doing what he does, you feel that
he's
bringing something
distinct. Inherently what Ed Sheeran does, which is basically slightly modern folk, singer-songwriter folk.
Yeah.
There's nothing necessarily novel about that. There is a bit of an attitude, I think, in some of his more interesting songs. There's a bit of he clearly is enamored of hip hop. He raps on a few of his songs. There are fringes to his music that are not, say, in Damien Rice.
But he's also a very ambitious dude. So can you tease out to what extent his interest in hip hop, et cetera, is just like doing good business?
I do think it's genuine. I will say this. The thing that struck me most, I mean, first of all, Ed Sheeran's out here winning. The table.
For sure.
Ed Sheeran is a winning. That dude has sold millions of records off of basically non-tempestuous folk songs. He opened for Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
He told me exactly how many people he played to on that tour. It's 1.6 million people.
Mm.
He has sold a lot of records. He has, you know, sold a few million copies of that first album worldwide.
Yeah.
He's hoping to sell
slowly.
A couple million more. Slowly.
Over a period of time.
It was not the most obvious sales pitch.
Nothing about him is particularly obvious. My big revelation about him was 2 years ago at Jingle Ball, when he came out and did maybe a 3-song set just alone with his little guitar.
It is a little guitar.
It's a little Martin. It's the kind that kids play when they're not fully grown.
I thought that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the teenage girls went nuts.
Yes.
And it was one of those things like, oh, that stuff is pretty mediated, you know, those shows. But this was one of those things where it was a little bit surprising.
Well, Ed Sheeran, I think, partially because of the Taylor stuff and partially just by his own savvy, I think has found a lane. It's funny. He described, you know, he was like, in England, basically, there's only a couple of lanes and a couple of spots at the top.
Yeah.
And he was basically like, you know, I had to fight to get my spot at the top, and I have to make sure nobody takes it. And, you know, he sort of alluded to the fact, like, you know, he took, you know, James Blunt's spot, as if that were a thing.
Right.
Which we would laugh at in America, but, like, in England, is a real thing.
Sure.
And he also shares a manager with James Blunt. Sorry, Stuart.
Hmm.
That's a real thing that happened. But, you know, here he's like, you know, here I sort of fit into the John Mayer, Jason Mraz thing, which I guess is sort of true. But I don't actually think that that's the root of his success, because I've seen John Mayer play Jingle Ball maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And those teenage girls didn't want one thing to do with him.
Right.
And given what we know about John Mayer, what a relief that is.
Sure.
You know, Ed Sheeran is sort of he's slippery. He's modest. I feel like he cedes control of the space. Like he's not aggressively masculine. He's not testosterone-y. He kind of slides in and then kind of charms you once he has slid in there.
Right.
I don't feel like his teen crowd is sort of like maybe alpha teens. I think they're like smart girls and, you know, thoughtful girls and artistic girls and kids like that.
Yeah.
And he seems like a relatable idol figure
right.
to them.
Right.
And I think that's helped him in his music. And I think it's also helped him in his dating life.
Hmm.
You know, he's sort of been attached to Ellie Goulding, Selena Gomez, some other people who he would not talk about, but who are well-known people.
Not with Taylor Swift, however.
I mean, he says... I don't have TMZ on it, you know,
right.
but
right.
I'll take it at face value.
There is a game being played in his songs which seem to be direct, and then somebody finds out that it is about somebody, and he's sort of, to you, he seemed disappointed that one of those things had been found out.
And that was the thing. It was interesting because, look, you talk to Taylor, right? And Taylor's looking at you, and she knows you want to ask, and she knows that, like, she could tell you, but she'll never tell you. And you'll never ask, really. Or even if you ask, you know you're not going to get an answer.
Yeah.
She understands there's a game underneath it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or certainly by now she does. Maybe like 5 years ago she didn't. But mm-hmm. certainly now she does. I was surprised at what seemed like the very sincere way in which Ed Sheeran was disappointed that people wanted to know who one of his songs was about.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, which is another song on the record, which is like kind of one of the angrier songs. It's
yeah.
like theoretically it's about Ellie Goulding. Who knows really what it is.
But, right.
You know, I asked him and he was like, "It's about a lot of things, John. It's about a lot of things." Which I thought was like kind of a great non-answer.
Yeah.
Because I undoubtedly a true non-answer.
Yeah.
Well, but he was really upset. He was just like, "Sing." People are just like, "I love that song."
Yeah.
"I don't love that song. I love it." He's like, "Whatever it is, it's about the song."
Right.
And then he was like, "I will tell you that that song is about a totally famous person. But because no one is gleaning that from the lyric,
right.
they're just engaging with the music."
Did he tell you who it was about?
No.
Oh, John.
Oh. So I have my ideas.
We haven't
we
even said yet
for that.
That this record is called Multiply.
It's called Multiply.
It is rendered with an X. Just an X.
Yeah. He was wearing Malcolm X hats the whole time I was there.
Interesting.
No, that's not true. That definitely didn't happen.
And Sing is obviously produced by Pharrell
yes.
and Benny Blanco.
Most of this album is very similar to the first album, which are these very like bucolic, peaceful folk songs
yeah.
that are like love songs. They're songs about finding love, keeping love, or losing love.
Yeah.
They're very familiar. You know, this is he's not doing a new thing. I happen to think he's a pretty sharp songwriter melodically. I think his structures are really good.
Yeah.
You know, words... Some are good, some are not so good, but like generally speaking, he's a pretty sturdy songwriter. When I look at the sort of fringier stuff, like, you know, it's clear he like wants to push in certain directions. He's
yeah.
pushing himself in different ways. This thing with the Sing record that Pharrell did was originally not for this album. It was going to be for some later album.
It was for an album called Justified.
I think you mean the 2020 Experience Volume 1.
Right.
Yeah.
The blimped out version of you know.
Like definitely like the Target bonus track.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
Like the bonus MP3 bundle for Target Japan or something. He said he played it for Elton John. And Elton John was like, "Yeah, put it on this record." Which is like, of course, like every time Elton John tells me to do something, I definitely
God
do
has spoken.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So it's like, obviously, that's fine. But what was really striking is, rather than being sort of apologetic about like, "Oh, well, you know, I just don't even know about this radio song," he was like, "No, I want a radio hit." He's very calculating. And it was very surprising to see someone who is, I think I use the phrase definitionally modest in the piece talking about him and his and like the music that he grew up around. But he's very calculating. I think he sees a spot and he's being very, very mechanical about trying to get to it. So he knows that Sing can do for him what all these other songs, the A-Team and yada yada, what all those other songs couldn't quite do.
So he's not concerned, as we might think he would be, about whether his most well-known song at the moment is the song that contains the most of him.
No. And
he just wants to get over right now.
Yeah. And here's a proposition.
Mm.
Ed Sheeran may be a cool guy who just happens to be really good at an uncool thing and savvy enough to kind of milk that uncool thing. But like in his heart, he wants to make records. You know, he made record. He had a grime rapper collaboration album. He did an EP with Yellow Wolf.
I'm confused all of a sudden about what's cool and what's uncool. You're saying the Justin Timberlake replica is cool.
No, I think what I'm saying is that Ed Sheeran, in his heart, is interested in doing things that are not straight ahead folk, but is at his best doing straight ahead folk.
Yeah.
And the Justin Timberlake thing is some kind of weird compromise.
Right.
It's a wink, kind of. I don't think it's in, I don't think it's cool. Like, I don't like it that much.
Yeah.
But it's a bit of a compromise.
Yeah.
It's a way of breaking out of the box.
Yeah.
Even sure. Yellow Wolf hasn't done a record with Yellow Wolf.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Could you clear up something for me?
Unlikely.
Besides the first question, which you still haven't really answered, about his aura.
Yeah.
His being. What was sort of coming off of him when you were near him? Did you feel drawn in?
I liked him. I thought he was warm with like a bit of a killer vibe on the inside. Like externally, very placid. Like there were no ripples on the surface of the lake.
But he could like slice quickly.
I kind of felt that, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. He talked a lot about having like a really bad year in 2013. And you just kind of imagine like, well, what's that look like? You seem like such a charming kind of guy.
Right.
And he was talking about, you know, like breaking women's hearts and getting drunk all the time.
Putting
on all that beer weight and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. It sounds like he's got some darkness in him. But the thing that has gotten him the farthest is playing the nice guy. I don't know if he's playing it, but being a nice guy and being approachable.
Right.
And that's what's got him, you know, we're talking about writing for One Direction. And he was like, right, well, I was sleeping on the couch of a guy who was playing guitar on X Factor when they were on X Factor.
Yeah.
And so there I wrote for One Direction. And he's like, I met Demi Lovato because I was like hanging out with Taylor Swift and Demi's Taylor's friend and da, da, da. It's just a lot of like, hey, bro.
To me, it's kind of great to understand that that's how these things happen. That if you want to write for One Direction, you don't actually have to be a machine. You know, you don't have to be like...
No, but I think it helped that around the time that One Direction was looking for writers, he was also sort of on his own path.
Couch surfing.
Yeah, and on his own path, like he had a record deal. You know, it's not like he was...
Right, right, right.
He wasn't just like a rando.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't like we pulled someone out of the lunchroom here.
Yeah.
You know, he was a guy with like six EPs under his belt. Yes, no, it wasn't necessarily like Dr. Luke's fifth
right.
in command
right.
had to go in the room kind right. of... But, you know, this album, there are some really, really sort of elegant and beautiful moments on the record.
Yeah.
When he pushes himself out of his actual comfort zone into his emotional comfort zone, which are these, like, he's rapping and he's doing this. Like, I feel like he's less successful. Like, that's not necessarily what people are there to see him. Like, people are there to be serenaded by him. When I was watching the taping, the Austin City Legends taping, like, those girls were not there to be rapped to. You
right.
know what I mean? Like,
sure.
they were not there to hear him be mad and
no.
rapping.
No.
They were there to hear the song from The Fault in Our Stars. You
yeah.
know, like, they were there to be serenaded. Shouts out to the interns at Austin City Limits also, just while we're here.
All right.
Yeah, killer.
They were good to you?
Good kids. What does it say about this generation of teenage girl that, like, this is their idol? That, to me, is an interesting question.
On his Wikipedia page, which for now will have to serve as his official biography.
I just want to say I have not updated it recently, so well, I don't know what
somebody might have done.
Yeah.
Because it says that the song One,
yeah.
the new song
yeah.
One,
mm-hmm.
was written on a guitar made out of a whiskey bottle in a hotel room whilst on tour in Perth. Did you ask him how to make a guitar out of a whiskey bottle?
NYTimes.com/video.
Exactly. Right?
I don't know.
Ask Mr. Science.
Did it actually say whilst?
Well, yes, of course.
Oh, my God.
But it's the whiskey bottle thing that I'm really concerned with.
I'm really concerned with the whilst. I am going to go update that page now. I am going to fix that.
Well, should we change subjects?
Now, was that a literal guitar or a metaphorical guitar?
I don't know.
Maybe that was a metaphorical guitar.
And if he wrote his own entry, I'm even more impressed.
Wow. Can we talk a little bit about his recordings with The Game?
Yeah.
Okay, so like, look, I like The Game. The Game is a pretty good technical rapper who's like just sort of like a bad kid who's like always in detention and like just getting into fights all the time. Maybe only has like a limited palette of what he raps about because all he just does is reference other rappers and things in rap history.
Mm.
And The Game has never been like a complete superstar, but he occupies sort of a warm place in my heart.
Sure.
And I think there are plenty of people who like The Game quite a bit. So Ed Sheeran and The Game have recorded an entire album of songs together.
And how is it available?
It's not yet available. It will be available, I think, either later this year or early in the following year via Ed Sheeran's imprint on Atlantic.
Okay.
I can't help but be charmed by the idea that, like, Ed Sheeran, as he's, like, fighting his way to the top of the folk pile
right.
and, like, trying to steal Taylor Swift's fans, is like, you know what I really want to do?
right.
Is, like, spend, like, six nights in the studio
sure.
with The Game.
Yeah.
And they're funny. Like, the songs, I mean, they're folk songs, their acoustic singer-songwriter songs, by and large, what the game raps on.
Sounds great.
And then a couple of songs, there's one that DJ Mustard produced, which is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And I thought kind of good that, you know, Ed Sheeran is like just doing like real, like Trey Songz R&B
right.
hooks, and the game is rapping real nasty on it. It's just important that this is a thing in the world. If God forbid Ed Sheeran like dies tomorrow,
yeah,
like that needs to be unleashed upon the planet. Like I just want people to know that this exists.
Well, the thing about him that I find likable is that he just seems curious. Like he seems up for stuff.
He definitely is.
You know, and maybe not overly concerned with a narrow presentation of what he is and can be.
I may date myself with this when I lived in London in 1997 to 99, like a sort of like joke that people would say, and I don't know what it was based on because I don't speak British too well, but like people would be like, I'm lodging it in Ibiza. Lodging isn't going for it, like having a great, like,
yeah.
like living it big.
Yeah.
Like Ed Sheeran he's lodging it. That's what he's doing. He's just out here lodging
yeah.
it. In, whether it's in Ibiza or in Perth, whilst in Perth. Or in Austin. First of all, that you know, they were in Austin. They were like, "We need some barbecue. Let's
right.
go to Stubbs. Like, just do it."
Right.
They were chasing their bliss. And I was really also taken with his traveling team, who were just completely. They didn't have a care in the world.
Mm.
They were not stressed. Like they were getting the job done, but they didn't have a vibe that you're around most platinum artists and their teams are tense.
Yeah.
Everybody's stressed. Like this person's not doing this right. This person's not doing this. Ed Sheeran's people were just like, they had it great and they knew it. And the energy was just so calm and so right. And I found that really admirable because that's like a famous guy.
Is that because he's done it on his own terms and nobody's going to just yank this away from him?
I don't know if it's that. I think it's that there's a real – it's the same people that he's been dealing with basically since he first had his deal.
Mm.
And I think there's just a tremendous amount of comfort. And I think they know kind of exactly what they need to do and exactly what they don't need to do.
Mm.
Even doing Austin City Limits. I mean, look, that's like a prestigious thing, but it's – maybe he's a little too famous for it. But they were super into it, and he's wearing the T-shirt, and, you know, I watched him from the control room, and I watched him, like, from the side of the venue, and it's, like, a very awkward space. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful room, but it's very stiff, and he's just going for it. And he was, like, excited to be doing this thing
yeah.
that felt important to him.
Right.
And that was, I thought, admirable, given the fact that he could have been out chasing more Taylor Swift fans.
Sure.
Or chasing da-da-da.
Sure. He's a free spirit.
Solid bro.
Should we change subjects?
Yes.
Let's hear something by Sam Smith.
Absolutely.
Called Leave Your Lover.
Pick up and leave everything. Don't you see what I can bring? Can't keep this beating heart at bay. Set my bedmates out free. I will give you all of me. Just leave your
John, Ed Sheeran is 23, Sam Smith is 22.
And if you add those two together, you're somewhere near the people in this room.
Why'd you have to bring that up?
I was feeling so good. It's tattooed on my forehead.
And you said that.
It's tattooed on my forehead.
By the way, Ed Sheeran's album comes out next week. Sam Smith's album is already out.
It's in stows.
And it's called?
In the Lonely Hour.
In the Lonely Hour. So Sam Smith, the third cousin of Lily Allen.
Ooh. Now, when we were emailing about what to do on Bobcast,
yeah.
I said, you know, you were like...
I said, let's do one or the other, and you said, let's do both.
No, and here's why.
Hmm.
An interesting thing to talk to Ed Sheeran about, if you ever have the chance, is what British singers are cool and not cool.
Right.
Also, I may be dating myself with this slang, but which singers are naff? Do you know this
yeah,
language?
Yes. Sure.
And so we were at Stubbs.
Meaning cheesy.
Yeah, slightly tacky.
Yeah.
Corny. And, we were at Stubbs. This was before the actual interview. It was early in the day. I spent the better part of the day with them. We were at Stubbs, and we were just talking about music. I think it was sort of feeling each other out. And somehow we got on the subject of Sam Smith. And I was like, you know, like, obviously I think Sam Smith has, like, a really tremendous voice. It's, like, really precise. It's so clear. It's really powerful. But I was like, I think he's naff. And he's like, huh? I think he's quite cool. And I was like, yeah, but like he's like a show pony or something. Like, I just, there's no edge. And then he's like, well, what do you think of Emily Sandé? And I was like, well, it's funny you say that. Like, Emily Sandé, as you may remember, made a record that I liked quite a bit. I think it was my number one record of 2012. Mm-hmm. And I recently put that record on while I was cleaning my house, sort of like looking for something to listen to. And I was like, wow, this is a really naff record. I must have been having a weird 2012. I still think it's technically really accomplished. I think the songs are really good, but there's something where I'm just like, this is not a cool record. You know, in so much as we want our lists to like make us look cool.
Right.
Like, there's nothing cool about me having this top of my list.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the kind of artist that Sam Smith is. Ed Sheeran has this thing inside him that's quite robust, and he taps directly into it. And he's sort of natural and
earthy,
and you get the sense that he's doing what he wants to do. Sam Smith is quite a bit different.
You can actually tell quite a lot by how they dress. You know, Ed Sheeran very famously dresses terribly.
Slob.
Oh, man. If you were to take the jeans that I wore in 1997.
Right.
When I wore exclusively incredibly baggy jeans with Tim.
Turn them inside out.
Made a pattern from them.
Right.
And then made them out of oak tag and, like, you know, the packing stuff when they pack a glass bowl.
Right.
It's like that kind of, not the bubble wrap, but the paper type packing stuff.
Yeah.
If you made pants out of that.
Yeah.
And then damaged them, like, you know, messed up the hems and whatnot. He wore those.
Which I have to say is part of his appeal. When you go to see him perform, you're like, wow, that guy's so comfortable with himself.
I mean,
he's
certainly not keeping any laundromats in business.
Right.
Although I will say he cleaned up a little bit. He was wearing some skinny jeans, and I kind of gave him a hard time about that. Because I was like, I read some interview where you said that you wouldn't wear skinny jeans, and I'm pretty sure you wear skinny jeans. And he was like, no, I said I wouldn't wear skinny jeans that my stylist gave me. So, take that, Ed Sheeran's stylist.
Yeah.
Ah! But anyway, Ed Sheeran's a slob. He's not put together.
Yeah.
That's by design.
Yeah.
You know, Sam Smith is drawn with, like, you know, those paintbrushes that just have one little brush
hair. The smallest nib.
Yes. He's drawn with one of those. Yeah. Everything, like, micro detail is fine. At the Apollo show, you know, he's wearing, you know, like a white dinner jacket with a black peak lapel. His hair is all gelled in such a way into that perfect widow's peak, like a bunch
looks
of
like a guy
like
from,
marching
from
soldiers.
The 20s, like Rudy Valley or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And it's, but not in like a swinging way.
No.
You know what I mean? He's the entertainer at like a posh hotel in the 1920s.
Yeah.
That's not to say his music is quite that prim, although it is very, very prim. But he's very much, he's like a show pony.
Tortured show pony.
Well, at parts, yes. I mean, you know, this is, you know, we talk about the tabloidization of Ed Sheeran. There is this sort of like sub-tabloidization of Sam Smith, which is, you know, he recently announced that he's gay in a Fader cover story.
Right.
Which, you know, if you listen to some of his songs, may have been a thing that had occurred to you previously, but is something that has come up. And
this has become part of his story.
It's become part of the narrative. And, like, you are now encouraged to hear the album through the lens of this unrequited love.
Right. So he's doing a sort of English, new English, sort of radical sensitivity R&B. Sort of
austere, super austere.
Yeah.
Very prim.
James Blake plus Adele, I don't know, with some Anthony in there as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a little Anthony. The Adele thing is interesting because I feel like the typical person who I know, who we know, who likes Adele, they don't understand that Adele is wild boring, like insanely boring. And I like Adele. Like, I actually really like Adele, but I don't want to pretend that Adele's cool. Adele is naff. Adele's slightly uninteresting. Now, I'd venture to say she's pretty uninteresting.
I'm just letting you go.
You're letting me hang myself.
Yeah.
No, it's great. I can't wait for the emails. In the piece, I'm saying, like, Adele, Emily Sandé, Sam Smith, like, they are all of a feather in this way. They are technically tremendously accomplished singers. They're very good songwriters. They are all nodding to kind of, like, slightly cool, modern British electronic soul.
Yes.
But all of them just want to be lounge singers. Like, that's, like, in essence, what they're good at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they're most comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing Sam Smith on record, you feel the stiffness, although he has some songs, you know, Leave Your Lover, I think, is really intense. Stay With Me is really intense. Mary J. Blige has a duet. They have a remix with Mary J. Blige, and she came out at the Apollo show.
Right.
And that was like a really big moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he held his own. I mean, Mary was definitely under singing, but like he held his own for sure.
What you suggested in your concert review, by the way, is sort of that almost like the trajectory of Sam Smith's short career thus far is almost like the reverse of Ed Sheeran's, mm-hmm. in that, you know, he came in through these dance tracks.
Cool Kid stuff.
You know, yeah. He got over that way, and then he showed you how austere he could be. Ed Sheeran is sort of like bringing the austere first and then ramping up into Justin Timberlake.
It's funny. I almost basically just didn't pay attention to Sam Smith because when I heard him on the Disclosure song, Latch, I was like, this is the wrong direction for Disclosure. It's like a soft garage R&B. Mm. And I thought their earlier tracks were like much more biting. And I was like, and who's this guy? Who was like a good singer, but like, he doesn't feel like he fits right on this kind of record. And then I remember seeing like Sam Smith has solo stuff. And I was like, that guy, if it's going to be more stuff like that, I don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
What really got me about him is they leaked a song last year called Not In That Way, which is also on this album in like slightly different form.
Right.
And that is, I mean, it is bare bones. It is raw. It is, you know, it's just some open wound stuff.
But it's also a measured performance, isn't it? Almost as if there were many, many takes and he sort of plotted how it was going to proceed.
I think that that's fair, but he has a real weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, the voice is real. Like, it's not, there's no getting around that.
Sniper precise, as somebody put it recently.
Give that guy a raise.
By the way, NAF backwards, fan.
With two Fs. So it's Welsh, is what you're saying.
No,
it's a Welsh
work. Yeah, yeah.
In the way that the Ed Sheeran album is, the thing that they have in common is they're both at their best when they're kind of at their most basic. Like when Ed Sheeran's like coloring
sure.
outside the lines, it's
sure.
like, that's fine. Like you're like a weird dude that like sort of sounds like you listened to a lot of Eminem growing up.
Yeah.
There's a song that we're going to play at the close called, you know, maybe it's Tenerife Sea, maybe it's Tenerife,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's Tenerife. I don't know. I'd like some emails on that as well.
Tighten up your Canary Islands game.
Seriously. Anyway, that song's real beautiful. And there's like three or four songs that are just unquestionably lovely. And the same thing on the Sam Smith record, the less processed songs, even though they're all very processed, but the less processed songs, the rawer ones, are by far his strongest ones.
Yeah.
At the concert when he was playing, well, he didn't do the main version of Latch, but when he did La La La, which is a record he did with Naughty Boy, and there's like another Disclosure song, I think, called Together. When he did those, I was just like, don't do these songs. Like, you don't need to do this. Like,
yeah.
this is, and Money on My Mind, which is yeah. like one of his singles.
Yeah.
And I think he thinks he's really clever because the chorus, I don't know if you know the chorus, but it's like,
I don't have money on my mind.
And it's like, I'm going to get everyone to sing Money on My Mind
because
people are stupid.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say I don't have money on my mind because I'm not stupid.
Right.
Actually, that's dumb.
I'm actually kind of curious to see what his next move is because when you're out there by yourself, you're not behind keyboards or whatever. You're not a sort of producer type, but you're the front and center guy with the phalanx hairdo.
Hell yeah.
How long can you maintain that position of I renounce all earthly things, I am defenseless, I am pure, I do it for the love? At some point, doesn't there have to be some element of, dude, I'm a star coming in?
It's interesting. You can tell he's not at ease with the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's happening really fast. When I think of him in 5 years and 10 years, I don't see him as like a big filling up the room star. I mean, or not in the way we might think of it in the modern age.
Yeah.
He's a Barbra Streisand figure to me. Now, whether there's room for a Barbra Streisand figure in 2015, 18, 22 or whatever is a different question.
By which you mean essentially a cabaret singer.
Yes, like a high-test cabaret
right,
singer.
Right.
Whereas like Ed Sheeran, that dude wants to be Bono. You know what I mean? Like that guy mm-hmm. wants to.
Right.
He still performs even when he does big shows, you know, at the Garden or whatever. He still performs just with a guitar and a loop pedal.
Yeah.
But he said at the end of this run is when he finally goes in with the band, starting with the next album. So, you know, Ed Sheeran will be doing like wild, annoying, tacky arena stadium tours 5 years from now. And like my hope that I'm going to see Sam Smith like at Carnegie Hall.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
With the Village Vanguard.
Yeah.
Only if things go south.
Yes. Here's the thing. Let's play the song that I think, frankly, either singer could sing with equal levels of conviction, and that's Ed Sheeran's Tenerife Sea.
Tenerife Sea. Thanks, John. Come back sometime.
That would be naff.
You look so beautiful in this light, your silhouette over me. The way it brings out the blue in your eyes is the Tenerife Sea.
That's our show, and thanks for listening to it. You can read John Caramonica on the subjects of Ed Sheeran and Sam Smith at nytimes.com/music. Listen to our Spotify playlist for those artists and others associated with. Our producers are Jeremy Egner and Jocelyn Gonzalez, and we'll see you next week.
It's enough for me, 'cause all that you are is all that I'll ever need.